Father in heaven, we do thank you for this evening. What an opportunity it is to gather to worship you. And we worship you in so many different ways. And right now, Lord, we worship you through learning about dangerous teachings and specifically the teaching of social justice. So give us understanding as we talk about social justice and biblical justice and to see the difference and to see the dark history of social justice. Give the people here understanding. And we ask that you guide us in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so the topic this Wednesday, tonight, and next Wednesday is social justice versus biblical justice. So we're going to be talking a lot about Marxism. Actually, every single title you have in your sheet of paper has Marxism in the title because that's what social justice is, and that's what we need to understand. It sounds so nice. It sounds so innocent. But social justice is a form of Marxism. So with that in mind, I want to talk here about the origins and teachings of Marxism. And before I do that, I want you to turn in your Bible to Exodus chapter 22, in an ESV Bible specifically. This is an exercise. We're not actually going to read anything here, but you'll see why I'm having you turn there. Okay, Exodus chapter 22. And the first person who can read the heading that I'm looking for, please read that heading. Yeah, isn't that interesting? So the publisher of the ESV Study Bible and the ESV Bible is Crossway. Crossway is located at Wheaton College. Wheaton College is a Christian college, but it's also, I would say, a very worldly Christian college, but been very influenced by the world. So it shouldn't shock us that they have borrowed the world's terminology, laws about social justice. It should not say that, but it says it right in our Bibles. And I'm kind of like, why did we get the ESV Bible? But oh, well. Well, we can't buy new Bibles every year, so we'll be stuck with that for a while. But maybe someday we'll switch Bibles. But yeah, so isn't that interesting? You get to see right there how the world infiltrates the church so easily. And it's in the headings of our Bible. So anyway, we're going to look at here the first heading here, the origins and teachings of Marxism. To understand social justice, you need to go back to its origin. The term social justice was first coined by Roman Catholic theologian Luigi, okay, that's a wonderful name, Luigi Taparelli. Okay, Luigi Taparelli. Just think of Mario, okay? Luigi Taparelli. And this is a term that has been used after him by many all the way to the present day, even in our ESV study Bibles. He lived from 1793 to 1862, and you've probably heard of social justice being called Marxism before. Raise of hands here. Have you heard that? Have you heard social justice be called Marxism? Okay. This is so because its origins do go back to Karl Marx. Okay, Marxism is named after a man, and that man is Karl Marx. Karl Marx was a German philosopher. He was a political theorist, and he lived from 1818 to 1883. I remember watching a documentary a number of years ago that said that at Karl Marx's funeral, only 9 people were present. 9 people. He could even crack double digits. What this shows is the little impact that he had on people's lives personally. I hope that we would have more than 9 people at our funeral. But what is interesting and troubling is that he is one of the most influential people in our world today. Top 10 most influential people in our world. One resource on the internet said that Karl Marx was a German-born philosopher, political theorist, economist, historian, sociologist, journalist, and revolutionary socialist. His ideas have been passed down through the academy, and in recent years especially have made their way into mainstream society. Karl Marx wrote a large work along with a man named Friedrich Engels. In this work, you probably have heard of it. Anybody know what I'm about to say? The Communist Manifesto. This was written in 1848. So think about this. Karl Marx was only 30 years old when he wrote the Communist Manifesto. In this document, he lays out what a well-functioning government, according to his own opinion, should look like. Marx talked about two different groups. Okay, there's a lot of information here. The bourgeoisie, anybody heard of that? Okay, on one end you have the bourgeoisie. Who are the bourgeoisie in society? They're the rich. They're the wealthy. It sounds like a rich word, right? Bourgeoisie. And then you have the other group. Anybody know? Alan probably knows the other group. The proletariat. The proletariat were the poor. Okay, so you have the rich, the bourgeoisie, you have the proletariat, the poor. Marx looked at these disparities of income and lifestyle between these two groups, and he saw it as an injustice. He viewed the bourgeoisie, the rich, as the oppressors in society, while the proletariat, the poor, were the oppressed. What he thought is that there should be a zero-sum game. What this means is that everything needed to be made equal. What specifically needed to be made equal was outcomes, financial outcomes, lifestyle outcomes. There needed to be an equality of outcomes. Okay, that's social justice in a nutshell right there. Write that down. There needs to be an equality of outcomes. That's social justice. A very simple definition of it. An equality of outcomes. In other words, there should not be rich and poor in society, but they should all be equal. And it is the government's responsibility to redistribute the wealth of the bourgeoisie, the rich class, to the proletariat, poor class. Okay? Redistribution of wealth. That's what we call socialism. Yeah. Yeah, amen. Yeah. Once that takes place, there are no rich and poor, and society is all equal at the outcome level. But Jesus said in Matthew 26:11, the poor you will always have with you. This is how it works. There are rich, there are those in the middle, and there are poor in society. It is never government's responsibility to fix something that you cannot change. In this system, those on the top, the government, control everything. Okay, that's what Marxism is. Another word for Marxism is what? It starts with a C. Communism. Last week, our pastor, Doug Schmidt, he shared the quote from Klaus Schwab. What was the quote, Doug? You will own nothing and be happy. And this came from Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum. This is the goal of Marxism. The government owns everything. In fact, this is one of the chief rules of Karl Marx's The Communist Manifesto. There is no private property. Okay, no private property. The government owns everything. A few weeks back, we talked about God's role for government. What we saw is that basically God's purpose for government is to promote the good and punish the evil. It is to establish justice so that there's law and order. That's the role of government. The role of government is really to get out of the way of people so that their God-given rights, these rights, as the Declaration of Independence says, endowed by their Creator, are protected. That is the role of government. It is not to take away people's God-given rights, but this is precisely what Karl Marx wanted and what any Marxist that follows his teachings wants. Okay, so that's the first heading. That's the origins of social justice, the origins of Marxism. Okay, let's go to the second heading here, the history of Marxism. Now, for much of American history, this has been rejected. To be an American is to be against Marxism. The American system is the opposite of Marxism. This is so because, as we have seen, America was built on Christianity, and a country that follows biblical principles understands the government is small, while people's God-given rights must be protected. Marxism does not view God as God, but views government as God. Another word for Marxism is communism. And you look at like the Soviet Union, you look at China. The Soviet Union was a communist nation. It was atheistic because they don't need God. The government is God. China, or as Trump says, China, right? How does he say it? Yeah. China is communistic. The government is God in China. It's atheistic. Another word for Marxism is communism, as I mentioned. Certain political leaders have taken Marx's teaching and turned a nation communist. Now, you get these political revolutionists. Vladimir Lenin turned the Russians, the Russian nation communist in what became called the Soviet Union. Mao Zedong turned China communist. Adolf Hitler, through the Nazi Party, National Socialist German Workers' Party, turned his nation into a communist dictatorship. Now, some will say that Hitler was not a communist, and they desperately want to say that he was a far-right leader, and if you're too conservative, you'll be just like Hitler. You know, that Donald Trump is so conservative. You know they call Donald Trump a fascist? They're trying to compare him to Hitler. Now, he's this right-wing nationalist fascist. I'm sure you've heard that, right? The Nazi Party. Look at the title of the Nazi Party here. National Socialist. Well, socialist is what? Marxist, which is what? Communist. So you look at that. They were, anything that is big government is communistic. Anything that where they control people's lives, and that's what the Nazi Party did. They control people's lives. A small group of leaders, you know, Hitler was at the top. A small group of leaders that controls everything. That is communism. So don't let anybody tell you that these far-right people are going to be like Hitler. It's just ridiculous. The German Workers' Party, it turned the nation into a communistic dictatorship. And where they take this is, he was so much about the German race, the white German race, and he was so against the ethnic Jews that he was this great nationalist, and so he was conservative. And so they take things like that, and yes, conservatives are nationalist. And yes, conservatives value their history, their tradition. It's good to value those things. But we as conservatives don't take an ethnic group we don't like and send them to internment camps. I mean, that's wild to say such a thing. We love our neighbor as ourselves. So anyway, don't let anyone ever tell you that... compare Trump with Hitler. You also have nations in Latin America who followed Marx's teachings, turning their nations communist. Can you think of one in Latin America? Venezuela. And who is their leader? Hugo Chavez. How about Fidel Castro in Cuba? And that one was really scary because that's only 90 miles from Florida. Cuba was only 90, it still is only 90 miles from Florida, and during the Cuban Missile Crisis, during John Kennedy's presidency. So you can see Karl Marx's influence. Think about this. 9 people at his funeral, and yet his book that he wrote, people who love power, loved what he wrote, they took what he wrote, they use his strategy, and they gain what they really want, which is power. So, and that is why men love Marxist ideas. They love his ideas because it gives them absolute power, and the founders of our country understood that absolute power corrupts what? Absolutely. It is in man's sinful nature to love having power. Right? Jeremiah 17 says, the heart is deceitfully wicked. Who can understand it? Man's sinful nature loves power and control over other people, and this is what Marxism provides. If the oppressed rise up against the supposed oppressor, what happens is class warfare. This is what they need to gain power, class warfare. They need a cultural civil war. Well, what do we find ourselves in right now? It's a cultural civil war. So what these leaders do is they take the side of who? Do you think they take the side of the oppressor or the oppressed? The oppressed. They take the side of the oppressed. By the way, they created this problem in the first place by labeling these people. They say, look at this group over here. Look at these rich billionaires. They get all the breaks. They're going after you. We're going to come fix the problem. These evil people are the problem. Let's start a revolution. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so remember Occupy Wall Street, that movement? Someone posted, occupy a job. I thought that was appropriate. So what these leaders do is they take the side of these supposed oppressed, they tell the oppressed how much they have been oppressed, and they get the oppressed to vote for them in a democratic system, in a republic. And what happens is a revolution. Those who vote for them are voting for those who don't value their quote-unquote rights, but they want to take away their rights. And oftentimes these rights are manufactured. They come up with things. It's like, what? Like what we see in our country. Like the right to marry whom you choose? Like, that's not a right. That's not a right that's ever been in the history of our country, but they turn it into that. They want to make these people, that is, this ruling class, they want to make these people dependent upon them. And the true oppressors become the leaders of these movements. Let me say that again. The true oppressors, they are the ones who become the leaders of these movements. It's interesting that Barack Obama, any of you hear the lecture that he gave to black men voting for Donald Trump? He's lecturing them like, you can't do that. You know, we tell you what you can and cannot do. You can't do that. You don't have a mind of your own. We do the thinking for you. Dinesh D'Souza actually made this comparison between slavery in the Civil War era. You have a slave owner, so you have a master. You have the slaves, and the slaves can only do what their master tells them, right? And this is what you have in the city. The Democratic leaders function as masters. They function as these slave owners. And they tell the black people, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. They make them dependent upon them. You vote for us, we'll keep giving you free money, we'll keep giving you food stamps, we'll give you all these handouts, we'll give you free education, but you have to vote for us. You know, it sounds very offensive, but Dinesh D'Souza actually made that comparison. It's like they have their own plantations in the inner city. And Barack Obama's like, how dare you go and vote for that man, Donald Trump? And of course, these black men, they understand that they've been sold a bill of goods. They've been told a lie. That they can do something with their life. And when they listen to Donald Trump talk, they're like, I like what I hear. I want American exceptionalism. I actually want to do something with my life. I can do that. And I'm not going to be held down by these people who just want power. They just want control. And it's really selfish. It's all about them. So anyway, okay. The people who lived in these countries, the countries that I listed already, the Soviet Union, China, Venezuela, Cuba, these countries that I've listed above can tell you the horrors of living in a country where a dictator rules over them. There's no due process. If you get the dictator upset, he can sentence you to death. For no reason, for any reason whatsoever, he can do that. And one of those countries is the Soviet Union. The Cold War was a war between the United States and the Soviet Union. It was a war where no shots were fired between free America, a nation that believes in God, that believes in the Bible, and atheistic, communist Soviet Union. And through the leadership of Ronald Reagan, the satellite nations of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe fell when the Berlin Wall was torn down on November 9th, 1989. So we saw Marxism at work with the Soviet Union. The government is God, and thankfully that fell, although it still remains in some level. But now in America, there have been communistic efforts, but they have largely failed because the people of this country, the land of the free, the home of the brave, one nation under God, where government is small, it's supposed to be small, and the citizens have God-given rights, this has long been protected, and most Americans have a hatred for government control. This is what's interesting about this election coming up is I hope it's a landslide for Trump. And I hope it's a landslide to show these Marxists that you can't do this in America. That this doesn't work in America. That Americans understand what a true government is supposed to look like. Now, I understand with eschatology, I believe that America one day will fall. And it could, you know, who knows, maybe it's just around the corner. Maybe this election's going to tell us. We'll find out. But we do have a responsibility to fight this off as long as we can as Christians. So Americans are allergic historically to Marxism. Now, the scary thing is so many of them have been deceived. So many Americans through the indoctrination, I'm getting ahead of myself here, through the indoctrination of the public school system, through the indoctrination of the universities, they have become Marxists, trained Marxists. And we're so, there's so many of them that we have a presidential candidate that is that. And a lot of people, millions and millions, tens of millions. I was in a room full of them yesterday. These are normal people you see in the grocery store. They don't look dangerous. And again, they're not dangerous. The average Democratic voter is not dangerous. But they don't understand that they've been indoctrinated. They've been deceived. They've become these trained Marxists by these secular false teachers. Okay, so now we're going to transition here to the third heading, and that is Marxism in economic policy. And this is where we're going to talk about socialism. Socialism, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Socialism is the redistribution of wealth. It's like Peter Pan. What did Peter Pan do? Who did he steal from? The rich. And who did he give to? The poor. Oh, did I say Peter Pan? Okay, I'm sorry about that. I apologize to those listening at home. No, it is Robin Hood. Everyone, no wonder everyone looked at me with a deer with headlights. So it wasn't Peter Pan, it was Robin Hood. There we go. Yeah, so Robin Hood, he took from the rich and he gave to the poor. That's what socialism is, taking from the rich, giving to the poor. And this has been a growing problem in America. And it goes back, at a significant level, it goes back to FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. A lot of historians rank him really high up. The New Deal, and I think he's rated way too highly as a great president, but the government started to use socialist policies to end poverty. Of course, the Great Depression, the New Deal was put in place to get people, to get the economy going. But of course, if you print money, nothing's free, right? Yeah, inflation happens. And a lot of conservative historians have said that the New Deal, it didn't save American citizens from the Great Depression. It actually prolonged the Great Depression. And I think if you look at Economics 101, I think that's true. It did prolong the Great Depression. So the government started to use socialistic policies to end poverty. And this is what Lyndon Johnson, President Lyndon Johnson, what was his great strategy called? Anybody remember? The Great Society. This is what the Great Society was all about. The goal of the Great Society was to end poverty. But look, we looked at what Jesus said. The poor will always be among you. You cannot end poverty. And if you're going to try to redistribute wealth, that's stealing. That violates, as we just saw in the Ten Commandments, that violates the eighth, I think it's the eighth commandment. Yeah, the eighth commandment. Exodus 20:15 says, "You shall not steal." This is what socialism does. So when FDR did these policies and Lyndon Johnson did these policies, they were taken from the rich and trying to give money to the poor. And by the way, private property is implied in the Eighth Commandment and the Tenth Commandment. The Eighth Commandment is you shall not steal, and the Tenth Commandment is what? You shall not covet. If you steal and you covet, that is sinful. And that's what socialism does. There's stealing and there's coveting. I want what this person has. This person's rich. We want that. We want it so bad, we're going to vote for this guy who's going to give us this guy's money. That is unbiblical. And a lot of Christians have pushed for stuff like this. Like, oh, these policies help people. It's like, well, we want to help the poor, but that's never been the government's role. This is not God's design for government. And if it's not God's design for government, we shouldn't support it. We should support churches helping the poor, families helping the poor. If a family has an old person, they should try to care for the old person as much as they can. Everything's turned into a government system. You know, so anyway, it's interesting to think about. So what we see here is the Bible believes in private property. In the Tenth Commandment, it says this: "You shall not covet your neighbor's house." Okay, whose house is it? Your neighbor's. "You shall not covet your neighbor's wife." It belongs, you know, Brianna belongs to me. She is my wife. His male servant. This was back in the days when they had servants. Or his female servant. Or his ox. That ox belongs to him. His donkey doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to him. Or anything that is your neighbor's. And here's a rant of mine. Why do we pay taxes on property if we own the land? It's just a common sense question. When you think about it, it's like, okay, so you own something. If you own a car, you pay everything off, you have no payments left. Do we pay taxes on that car? Yeah, I suppose we do. Yeah. we pay tabs, we pay, yeah. Yeah. They find ways, there's gas taxes and stuff like that. Yeah, so there's a tax for everything, right? But it's interesting. What you come to realize is that you don't really own anything. As the government expands, the government gets their hands in everything. They take from you here. They take from you here. They take from you there. Social Security. Oh, we're going to tax that too. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's right. Yep. So anyway, we see here the Bible is an anti-Marxist book, very much so. It's all about private property. It's all about people working for what they own. Okay, 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, "For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat." So we see God's design here. 1 Timothy 5:18 says that the laborer deserves his wages. The laborer deserves his wages, not the lazy guy who sits on the couch and expects a government handout. The laborer deserves his wages. So does the Bible promote socialism or capitalism? What's the answer? Capitalism. Yeah. Yeah, one question here. Yep. Yep. Yeah, correct. Yeah, so Mike is saying here, people who are able to work. Yeah, sometimes someone's not able to work, and that person needs to be provided for in some way, right? But my argument is, you know, the government has gotten so big in our country, we just assume that it's the government's responsibility to take care of them, right? And there might be a place for that to a certain extent, right? But how much better if it's a family who takes care of them? Yeah, that's right. I mean, in ancient times, did the government come in and care for an elderly person? You know, the family would have cared for that person. Yep, correct. Yeah, so family historically has been the one to take care of people, but the government kind of takes things over. You know, and Ronald Reagan's famous quote is, if the government comes and says, we're here to help, you know, run for the hills. It's interesting. You go to an airport. Anyone like going through security at the airport? I don't think I've ever met a less happy group of people in my entire life. I mean, it's just... I mean, one time I was walking through, I'm like, does anybody smile here? I mean, it's like against the... It's like, if you smile, you're going to get in trouble. Like, you can't do it. The TSA security. So anyway, you go there, and you have long lines. It takes forever to get your luggage through. It's just a... I mean, one of the reasons we drive to Florida is we don't want to go through security at the airport. It sounds ridiculous, but it's actually one of our reasons. But then you get to the plane, and you're not dealing with the government anymore. You're dealing with a private company, and they start to treat you well. You know, would you like a drink? Would you like food? The stewardess on the flight, they have first class sections where people can sit. No, I know. I realize some of the legroom in the coach area is really tight, but. My dad pointed this out to me one time. He says, that's the difference between government and private businesses. Private businesses, you get much better service, higher product. Everything is better. When the government does something, it's never as good. So anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself here. But so socialism takes away money from those who have worked for it, and it gives it to those who have not worked for it. And this is what the Bible calls stealing. This is breaking the eighth commandment. People acquire money through working. Through money, people acquire possessions. And these possessions are theirs. Now, we should be generous with what we have, but this doesn't change the fact that they are still your possessions. The Bible tells us that very clearly. When the government takes from one and gives to another, this is stealing. And it doesn't promote hard work. The free market capitalist system works because it rewards hard work. That's how God designed it. It is the laborer who deserves his wages, not the one who refuses to work but gets government handouts. The pilgrims in the early 1600s, in 1620s, at Plymouth Rock, they tried socialism out. Has anybody heard this story before? Rush Limbaugh, every single year, would do this story right around Thanksgiving to show why socialism doesn't work. He actually wrote a book on this for children as well. The pilgrims at Plymouth Rock tried socialism and found that it didn't work. At first, it was agreed that everyone got the same income and the same possessions. Then they realized that productivity was down because there was no incentive for hard work. Why would I work hard if this lazy guy over here, who's not doing much at all, gets the same amount of money that I do? Yeah. Equality of outcomes. Once the pilgrims realized that socialism doesn't work, people needed to work and work hard to get paid, and they saw productivity go up. That was their experience. Interesting. Well, I wonder why that is. Well, that's how God made it. That's how He designed it. And they're finding this out as they live it out in their community. I heard our Senator Ron Johnson speak recently when he came out here, and he said, capitalism produces three things. Okay, you can write this down. I think this is very helpful. Better product, better customer service, and better prices. Okay, let me say that again. Better product, better customer service, and better prices. If government has a monopoly over everything, okay, let's say health, the healthcare system, government owns everything, they have a monopoly, that's going to be a very poor healthcare system. And we've seen the government increase with the healthcare system. And has the quality gotten better or has it gotten worse? It always gets worse. So better product, better customer service, better prices. The free market capitalist system produces competition. If you're going to stay in business, you better be good. One of the reasons I don't like going to Walmart is because typically they have poor customer service. It's almost like they're so big, let's not even try anymore. Now, Nate Tomlinson does great customer service. Nate goes to this church. When I walk in the door at Walmart, he's like, well, can I help you find anything? And he takes me to whatever I need to find. I'm one of those people who gets lost very easily in a store. I need customer service, and I notice it when it's not there. Any place that has a monopoly, they don't have to have good customer service. But if you're forced to, then you're going to have a good product. You're going to have better prices. You can't overcharge everybody. And you're going to have better customer service. So the government, when they run everything, they produce a worse product, worse customer service, and higher prices. The reason that America has been so successful with the economy and businesses is because Americans have practiced biblical principles on the economy. To have socialist policies take over will lead to the decline and eventual death of a nation. It's a slow death that takes place. And we've seen the decline. Socialism has increased in America. We have lived it. We have seen the decline. In this election, we see a contrast. Kamala Harris is a socialist. She wants to redistribute wealth, and she wants to have more government control. Donald Trump, a longtime businessman who experienced the blessing of free market capitalism, rejects socialism and wants the worker who works hard to be rewarded through pay and the possessions that come through that pay. So one candidate is biblical on the economy, and one candidate is unbiblical. And that's crystal clear. Christians will try to say, well, the Democrats care about the poor. No, they don't. They steal from the rich, and they give to the poor, and the reason they do it is because they want power. They've bought into this Marxist thinking. And socialism has increased in recent years, and like I said, it goes back to FDR and the New Deal, where redistribution took place through government programs, the New Deal. However, under Obama, it really took off. Obamacare provided socialized health care. So what do you get with socialized health care? As I mentioned, a worse product, worse customer service, and higher prices. Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so for those listening, Mike is saying that your son got Obamacare.
When Obamacare came in.
Yes. If you had a really good medical program with your work,
they had to
downgrade it.
Taking people down.
Yeah, and then so Mike said, socialism is not just lifting people up, but it's bringing people down, and that's exactly right. So yeah, Mike's son experienced that with when Obamacare came in. So Biden did the same thing, and Harris wants to continue with policies such as these, and these policies don't help because even the people who are given these handouts are ultimately not helped because the Lord wants them to work. To own what he wants them to earn what they own. That's God's design. We are to help the poor in society, but this help is not to come through the government, but through family and local church ministry primarily. So free market capitalism is what the Bible teaches, and not socialism. Okay, we'll do one more heading this evening. This is the fourth heading, Marxism in the university. So we have seen Marxism show up in economic policies put forth by certain politicians, but we have also seen Marxism thrive in the universities all over the world, and increasingly in American universities in the 20th and 21st centuries. A guy by the name of Carl Grunberg, he was a Marxist professor of law at the University of Vienna in Europe. He started the Frankfurt School in Germany in 1923. Okay, so this is a very significant school in the history of Marxism. It's called the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School was a Marxist school, had all these Marxist professors there, and this school greatly influenced the academy in America. So while in mainstream America, Marxism didn't get much traction, with the university system, it has grown and grown and grown. Okay, we have to understand that. Throughout American history, Marxism has gotten little traction for most of American history. But the place where it gained lots of traction is the university. And where Marxism has grown and thrived in the university, it's through these two teachings, critical theory and critical race theory. Okay, critical theory and critical race theory. Okay, I'm just going to say a few more things here, and then we'll wait till next week to finish this. In order to understand critical theory, we must understand once again what Karl Marx taught. Marx once again taught that in society there are two categories, the oppressor and the oppressed. In his economic understanding of Marxism, it was, once again, who were the rich called? That fancy word? Yeah. The rich were called the bourgeoisie. So, we should name a dog that. Isn't that a cool name? Bourgeoisie. I don't know. Rich in food. No. And then you have the poor people, the proletariat. And what has happened in American universities is they have borrowed Marx's oppressor-oppressed framework and applied it differently. They have applied it to other social issues. Now, I mentioned socialism. Yeah, they do kind of borrow from Marx there directly by saying it's economic. But they have applied it to other social issues. Okay, the economic piece is always attached to it in some way, but they've expanded it. Critical theory is broader. For example, it sees disparities. Remember, equality of outcome is what Marxism is. It's equality of outcome. They see disparities with women and see those disparities as an injustice. You hear this all the time. Women don't make as much as men. So it must be that the men are oppressing the women because they're the ones making more. The women are making less. The men are the oppressors. The women are the oppressed. That's critical theory. With homosexuality, homosexuals should have the freedom to marry, just like heterosexuals have the freedom to marry. And if they don't have that, that's an injustice. Okay, so what happened in 2015 with the Obergefell decision is that gays were given nationwide the right to marry. That's critical theory. Again, this starts in the university system, and it makes its way to Main Street. We've already seen this happen over and over and over again. It starts with these political theorists in a room, blowing a bunch of hot air, and eventually it makes its way out into Main Street. You also see critical theory with transgenderism. Transgenders should have all the rights of those who are not transgender. The terminology for this, by the way, it's called intersectionality. Intersectionality. And what they're saying is, there's actually this thing called the fascist scale. It's called the F scale. And depending on these attributes that you have, okay, so if you're white, if you're a Christian, if you're a male, if you're straight, if you're not transgender, if you're not an immigrant, you are the highest on the fascist scale. And if you're old, too, by the way. So if you're old, white, straight, in other words, it's not looking at, like, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. said, I want my children to be judged not by the color of their skin, but what? The content of their character. That's actually a biblical line. For all the flaws that Martin Luther King Jr. had, that was a biblical line that he spoke. Critical theory is racist. It is truly racist. It is truly bigotry because it puts people in categories based on things they can't change. I can't change that I'm a male. I can't change that I'm white. I'm a Christian. I'm proud to be a Christian. If your family grew up in America and have long history in America, well, guess what? You're high on the fascist scale, this F scale. This is what they call intersectionality. We are the oppressors, the more we have of this. Okay, so if you're a white woman, you're somewhat high on the fascist scale because you're white. If you're heterosexual, you're somewhat high on this list, but you're not a male, so you're not as high as the males, because the males, they're the real problem. You understand what I'm saying? Like, this is the system we live in, right? So, yeah. So the older white men in this room, I'm sorry, you're the worst on the list here, I'm catching up to you here as I get older. but yeah, that's critical theory and intersectionality. Now, critical race theory is specifically about race. Okay, if you're white, you're guilty. Whether you did anything or not, you are a racist based on your skin color. You can't see it, but you in some way are involved in oppressing black people. So we're going to talk about this next week more, but Derek Chauvin and George Floyd, in some way, we, as white people, are to blame for what happened to George Floyd. They believe that. They do. And they believe that because of critical race theory. White man, white officer, by the way, police officers are high on the F scale too. White officer kills a black man. It must be racist. And he's guilty. He's guilty of a racist crime because he's white, right? That's critical race theory. We're going to look at that more in detail next week. But this comes from the university system. And it's these professors in the university system taking Marxist teachings on the economy, this socialistic, communistic teaching, and they're applying it to other social issues, like critical theory and critical race theory. So these have made their way from academia. So they went from Karl Marx to the Frankfurt School to the American university system to Main Street. And next week we're also going to look at to the pulpit. Okay? Think about that progression. All the way to the pulpit, the last place it should be. But we're going to look at how it very much has made its way to the pulpit. And to the ESV Bible as well. So, next week we're going to look at critical race theory in mainstream society, and we're also going to look at critical race theory and Marxism in general in the church. Okay, so I look forward to looking at that with you. It's a dark topic, but very relevant to us, because I do believe that this is the issue of our time. The magnitude of this is a government that takes over people's lives in the name of Marxism, which is disguised as compassion. It's disguised as doing what's right, but it's Satan's strategy to really destroy and to do a lot of evil. And we need to have the discernment as Christians to spot what he's doing with all of this. Okay, so that's what I want to be clear on. If someone is just walking off the street and they believe all the narratives, everything I just said would be like a great shock to the system. But my guess is this group here is probably like, yeah, no, we've been following this to a certain extent, and we understand what you're saying. But anyway, let's close in prayer. We do have some treats downstairs, and we'd love for you to stay around for fellowship time if you can. But yeah, Father in heaven, we do thank you for this time we've had, and this is a sobering topic, Lord. This really goes back to the devil's plans in this world, and help us to have clarity when we see this. And my prayer, Lord, is that more and more Christians would be able to see what's going on, to see the schemes, the lies of the devil, because that's what he does. He's a liar. He's the father of lies. And we are grateful, Lord, though, that you are the God of truth, and we are people of the truth, and you have given us eyes to see what's going on. And so help us to do our part, Lord, in the main street, in the public square, on these issues, to promote righteousness and to fight against these Marxist ideas that only cause damage. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.